Hello, and thanks for listening to the My Care Champion cast. For those not aware, it's currently National Public Health Week. This effort is designed to uplift public health issues and recognize those who are addressing barriers to improve the well-being of communities. The MHA is a proud sponsor of this year's event, and even prouder of the work being done by Michigan hospitals to enhance and expand resources that help residents thrive. One of the public health issues that continues to be a top priority for our members is food insecurity. With this in mind, I have two guests joining me virtually to share more about an impactful program that brings fresh, affordable produce, nutrition, and wellness education to vulnerable communities. The first guest I'll welcome back to the podcast is Dr. Julie Yarrow, president of ProMedica Charles and Virginia Hickman Hospital. Dr. Yarrow is a board-certified internal medicine physician with a doctorate of osteopathic medicine and is currently serving as chair-elect of our MHA Board of Trustees, in addition to being chair of the MHA Public Health Task Force. Dr. Yarrow, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Lucy. Happy to be here.
Our second guest is a newcomer, Frank Nagel, ProMedica's Director of Community Impact here in Michigan. With over a decade of healthcare experience, a bachelor's degree in exercise science, and a master of business administration, Frank is responsible for creating innovative strategies to address patient and community health needs. Frank, welcome to your first MyCare Champion cast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here and appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I say first because I know Dr. Yarrow has probably told you once we have you here, we're probably going to ask you to come back. So I hope you're okay with that.
Looking forward to that.
Well, Dr. Yarrow, the last time we had you here was to discuss behavioral health and policy alongside Representative Filler. So I know I asked this question back when we did that record, but that was some time ago. So could you give our listeners a bit of a refresh on your role and maybe to change things up, what drove you to shift from the clinical side of healthcare to leadership?
So I always hope, Lucy, that I can say I'm still part of the clinical side because that's what's near and dear to me. That's why I went into healthcare. It's about discovering the unknown, listening to people, caring for people, fixing problems, finding solutions. So whether you're on the clinical or the administrative side, you know, we have a common thread that keeps us connected with a common goal in the patients and the communities that we serve. So yes, as you stated, I'm president of ProMedica Charles and Virginia Hickman Hospital. It's classified as a rural hospital. Our community covers about 750 square miles, but also as a system, our footprint in Michigan for ProMedica, we have three mid-site hospitals. So one over in Coldwater, Michigan, and also in Monroe. So I'd like to say, you know, Frank and I are speaking on behalf of all three hospitals, but an opportunity that's been unique to the Hickman campus that we're happy to share with others and hopefully inspire them as well as we talk about public health and social determinants of health.
Yes, absolutely. And we're so glad to have you back. And Frank, since we have not had a chance to introduce you on the podcast before, if you don't mind sharing some insight into what led you into your current role, and then I always ask as a good lead into the conversation, what you love about working in healthcare.
Yeah, so what led me into the role was just a passion for health and well-being. Always grew up involved in athletics and activity in some capacity, but I pursued my bachelor's in exercise science, and I worked a couple of years more in the personal training space. And I just realized I had this calling. I really wanted to work on this at a community level, at a larger level, help more people to be able to be empowered to achieve their highest potential for health. So that led to some opportunity with coordinating grants with Charles and Virginia Hickman Hospital, which has been a great opportunity. And it progressed to where I'm at now, and it led me to want to get more into the business side and ultimately landing in this role where I'm able to work with our community partners on addressing some of those external factors that still affect healthcare. So it's always really been that that service to community. And I think the thing that I love about the job the most is being able to see these ideas come to fruition and community partners collaborating around an idea and bringing it to fruition and seeing its impact.
Right. Yeah. We hear the impact and the service as a common thread with healthcare workers. And I just appreciate you both for all you do for ProMedica and for the communities you serve. And we're going to learn a little bit more about that. But we're here today to not only celebrate National Public Health Week, but again, to learn about a really impactful program at ProMedica that does a wonderful job demonstrating how hospitals and public health can intersect, But before we jump into that, I think it makes sense, Dr. Yarrow, for you to kick us off by sharing a little bit about what the MHA Public Health Task Force is working on and maybe some of your priorities.
Yeah, so first off, I just want to say hats off to that team. That is a truly passionate team that is committed, engaged. So it's an honor to be a part of such an amazing group. So, you know, right off when we formed this committee, we realized we had to start building some relationships, relationships that focused around trust, collaboration, but also understanding the different roles from our public health sector to those of us that are more of an acute care setting within hospitals. So the beginning just really was forming those relationships and making sure we had the right representation sitting around the table. So I will say in the beginning, we did make some adjustments, increasing our public health representatives. So we evolved. So we made sure that we had the right voices and we were also telling the right stories and coming together with the right strategies and initiatives for the state. Mm-hmm. So what we learned was, number one, telling our story and making sure that story had a unified message that we could all share. You know, we learned a lot from the pandemic and we're still learning as we're doing a look back. And I realize for many of us, not just in the community, but inside the healthcare, there was some confusion at times, and maybe messaging was mixed. And we realized that that sometimes caused us all to have to take a step back. So one thing that we agreed upon was just going back to the basics of what is the true foundation of a story that resonates with everyone, that can be understood by all audiences and has a clear message and takeaway. So that's really been a strong focus of what we're doing. But most recently, as there has been increasing awareness of upper respiratory infections, not just COVID, but RSV, influenza, and then the recent outbreaks in Michigan with the measles, we are coming together to look at how we can encourage communities to understand the importance of vaccinations, all generations, and how we collaborate together. You know, some of our recent vaccinations for RSV, there were limitations in the amount. And so we came together with the health department to try to say, how do we prioritize who gets this vaccine and where those vaccines need to be located and whose responsibility it is in that delivery system? So I think that's been a big step for us, coming together, coming together before an issue becomes a huge barrier or gap in our ability to care for our communities.
Well, I know the MHA team is extremely grateful for your leadership and the expertise you lend, not only to that committee, but to our board of trustees, and your clinical background is extremely helpful and informative to the work that we do and the priorities that we set aside as an association. So I appreciate you sharing some of the things that the committee's working on and elaborating on that. And Frank, I know as Director of Community Impact, you have a lot of wonderful insight as well. So as a lead into today's discussion, can you share why it's so important for hospitals to be engaged in public health efforts?
Yeah, I think fundamentally, one of the most important reasons are our patients are also our community members. Mm-hmm. And if we're able to better understand how the social, environmental factors influence health behaviors and health outcomes, it can maybe help us to support community members in better utilizing healthcare, you know, navigating healthcare systems. But having the wraparound supports that are available through partnerships and other local resources, because those social, environmental factors are largely outside of the four walls of healthcare, but there are quite a bit of resources that are available. So if we're able to better understand it, we can better support our patients, can also help us with those patient touch points to be able to really focus on maybe the unique needs that each patient may have based on the circumstances they're experiencing.
Right. That's a really great explanation. And it reminds me, we had an event last September with the De Beaumont Foundation, and it was focused on kind of the intersection of hospitals and public health. And a lot of the focus of that event was on the different ways we communicate about health and how we deliver information and resources to the community differently. And I'm curious, and you can speak to this anecdotally or wearing your ProMedica hat, what would you say are some of the barriers that prevent hospitals and public health leaders from collaborating?
I think in many cases, you're looking at collaborating and addressing major deficits that have existed in community for long periods of time. And in many cases, those require a systems level change. It requires multiple sectors to be at the table, and it can't just be something that one agency takes on and then it's magically solved for the entire community. So I think the complex nature is being able to take it to a scale where you can achieve a system level change. And then I think many of us encounter it also, in many cases, the funding to be able to support such an effort is also needed. So I think, speaking from my experience, I think many times it boils down to a couple of those factors, but I think both factors could be overcome when you bring multi-sector collaborations and some lived experience to the table.
Right. Absolutely. Julie, anything you would add there?
Yeah. You know, Lucy, when you go back in history, public and medical health used to be under the same roof. It used to be one entity. And then with time, we split this into two sectors. So, you know, I think your question was around what barriers prevent us from coming together. And mm-hmm. I would challenge it. Really, there aren't any physical barriers. We just need to kind of dust things off and remember the importance that there is in coming together preventatively rather than reactive.
Right.
So again, we talked about in the pandemic, a lot of us didn't have established relationships or understanding the footprint of our public health sector and them of us and what our limitations were. And so, you know, even though luckily the pandemic has calmed down, we need to continue to have those relationships and those touch bases proactively so that out the gate, if there is a disaster, we kind of understand each other's role and we have that trust. So, you know, the barriers are probably barriers we put in front of us. You know, we always say we don't have enough time to go to another meeting, or, you know, we always wish we had picked up the phone. We need to probably be more deliberate about meeting a certain cadence. And I would say that's not just with public health. There's probably others that need to sit at that table to have that diversity and that equity. So, you know, the schools, local law enforcement. So again, we're kind of proactively looking at what we might expect in the next 6, 9, 12 months. And we already have a strategy going ahead of us as opposed to, again, being reactive.
Right. Absolutely. Well, the two of you are here because ProMedica is doing a very wonderful job of being engaged and addressing some really significant public health issues in your communities. So you actually, I should mention, did such a good, or are doing such a good job that you were recognized as a recipient of the 2023 Ludwig Community Benefit Award, which we give to members who are improving the health of communities through collaborative initiatives. So hats off to you. And that program that received an award was the ProMedica Farms and Veggie Mobile. And I don't want to steal your thunder, so I'll turn it over to the two of you to elaborate on what exactly that program is.
Yeah, so I'll kick it off and hand it over to Frank to give kind of the logistics and all the data on this. So this is a really fun initiative for all of us. And this was a way for us to start thinking outside the box. So I challenge all your listeners that we need to start getting outside the four walls of our hospitals or our local health departments and really get out into the community and see what we can do collaborating with maybe those less traditional community members. So again, logistics companies, local farmers, what can we do so that we're addressing needs, but being creative? And I would say making it fun, but making it accessible to the folks that we're trying to serve. So again, I think historically, we've always expected people to come to us. And we realized we needed to start doing some things that address the nutritional gaps that we saw in our community, that we were able to get those solutions out into the community. So that's the ProMedica Farms, which really started with the Veggie Mobile, which started, I think, Frank, was it 2018 we started this?
So the Veggie Mobile officially launched in 2013, and then the farm in 2018.
So 2013, we saw just getting research and data from the communities that we served that, you know, we have some really small towns that are population of less than 2,000. And it is difficult sometimes for our local grocery stores to stay open in those kind of environments, particularly when you have seasonal variation. And so whenever you need to scale down, I think one of the things that we saw was most likely are those perishable items, so those fresh fruits and vegetables. So we tried to think of a way that we could get fresh fruits and vegetables out to the community We didn't want to compete with the local grocery departments, but we heard that many of our folks had transportation issues. They also had financial limitations that allowed them to buy a whole bag of carrots or a whole bag of apples. And we also heard from our providers that we knew nutrition was an important part of making sure our patients stayed healthy. Mm-hmm. And so we have this Veggiemobile, which is literally a refrigerated truck that is covered in bright colors with fresh fruits and vegetables all over it. And we drive out to 30 plus stops a month, and we take produce into the communities that would be considered a food desert. And I think a lot of people I know, when I would talk to friends and family, are like, you're in rural America. Doesn't everybody grow their own produce? Well, no. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say when you look at rural America and urban America, we have the same issues. We just need to be creative in how we find solutions. So the Veggiemobile was a way for us to take produce out into the community. And I learned a lot. I've gone on field trips with the driver, and it's not just bringing apples and oranges and potatoes. We bring sunchokes, which I didn't even really know what a sunchoke was until I...
What is that?
A sunchoke, it looks like a horseradish root, but it is a healthy alternative, like a starch alternative for diabetics. Actually, any of us can eat. They're actually very tasty. But it tastes almost like a potato, but it's a healthier option for diabetics because it doesn't have the same carb or sugar release. So it allows them to kind of feel like they're having that starch, but it doesn't affect their sugar as adversely as a potato would. So, you know, we're getting out unique produce. We have a large Latino population, so there's certain peppers that they like, and we were able to stock those, but also educate people on different produce that they may not try, that would also be healthy if they have diabetes or if they have heart failure.
Right.
So started out with. And then our new campus is on 135 acres. We were able to build a brand new rural hospital right during the pandemic, and there was a farm sitting on that campus. And so we decided to expand our Veggiemobile into what we call the ProMedica Farms. And the ProMedica Farms is a way that we can educate folks on healthy eating. We can educate school kids on how they can cook a healthy meal in a microwave, or how they can grow a mini farm in a pot that could be sitting outside their back door. It also is handicap accessible. So we have raised beds so people with physical limitations can participate in growing. And some of that produce goes back into our Veggiemobile, and we're able to get it out in the community. But it's also allowed us to collaborate with many others. And I'll let Frank kind of share some of those collaborations, but just some of the statistics and the amount of produce that we get out and how we're able to allow people to pay for that produce and what we can donate back to them.
Right, yeah. And I know, obviously, identifying the needs of the community is done a lot of times by hospitals through the community health needs assessment, which I imagine was a big part of the foundation of this idea. So, Frank, can you speak to a little bit of the history of when and how and why the idea of the farms and the mobile came to be?
Yeah, and I wasn't involved at that time, but I came in shortly after. But to the question that came up earlier about the importance of healthcare being involved, there's so many pieces that healthcare can serve as a convener, like Dr. Yarrow said. And what happened in about 2010 was a convening of local agencies, so anchor institutions and agencies that have been in the community for long periods of time, came together because following the 2008 economic recession, there was perceptually so much need for food access. People were experiencing financial strain. They weren't able to get to the grocery store because of those barriers that Dr. Yarrow outlined, like transportation, for example. And so in that convening, the partners realized it'd been over a decade since the county had conducted a health assessment. Mm-hmm. So the hospital was able to work with the health department and partners in completing that. But the data point that really stood out to most people when they were doing the community health improvement planning was that less than 5% of adults were reporting they were eating the recommended servings of fruits and vegetables per day. Mm-hmm. And so that whole conversation sparked, right? Well, what does that mean for children? If parents are the ones doing the grocery shopping, then that affects youth. How can we take action? And so in that convening, the hospital and a couple other agencies came together and pursued a grant. So that power of collaboration led to securing a USDA grant that allowed for the Vegemobile program to launch in 2013. So that program started with, I believe, going to 3 scheduled stops per week and maybe 2 or 3 stops each day, to now, you know, there's upwards of 4 or 5 stops a day. And to Dr. Yarrow's point, we're going to over 30 community locations to take the produce to the community. And to address the barriers that she said, taking it to the community addressed the transportation factor, but all of the produce that's purchased from local growers, farmers, a wholesaler, one, it allows the program to operate year round, but two, it allowed us to be able to sell all that produce back to the community at no cost. So now people are able to stretch their EBT and their SNAP dollars further. They're able to stretch all of their income a little bit further because now there's just a little bit more affordable produce option that comes to them and can overall just provide the easier choice as a healthier choice. So immediately, I think that was some of what we encountered was we saw there was a need. Community partners came together to be able to address that. And the hospital was able to serve as a lead in that. And I think that anchor institution role is why the hospital came into being the lead for that. And it ultimately resulted in great resources that have blossomed to having now the farm campus open in 2018. So the progression was really great. I think as far as the history of the Vegemobile is concerned, that was really the fundamental start of it. And it was able to be sustained beyond that because the hospital stepped in to sustain it long term.
Right. That's incredible. And I know this might seem like a little bit of an obvious question, but Dr. Yarrow, with your clinical background, can you touch on the tie between food insecurity and how it affects health outcomes for residents?
You know, first off, when people have a limited income, you have to determine where you're going to spend those dollars, right? And I hate to say this, eating healthy, it costs more. There's also more time and energy, and there's other, you know, sometimes limitations as to what you have access to cook on that can limit what you choose to eat. And so I think when you have a limited income, you go for those non-perishable items. So one of our goals here was we really need to look at how we can make this more accessible so they can make the right choices, because we know, unfortunately, those non-perishable items are higher in sodium. So high sodium diets can cause issues with patients who have congestive heart failure, peripheral edema. So people whose legs are swelling up, the more sodium they intake, the more swelling they can have, the higher their blood pressure. You know, we talk about diabetes, end-stage renal disease, two very common diseases in the state of Michigan. Again, more fresh fruits and vegetables help control people's blood sugar so they can lower their medication costs. They also have improved lifestyle. They can be more active. Obesity, again, you know, high obesity rates across the nation. And we know, again, more fresh fruits and vegetables, we can hopefully lower the chances of obesity in our population across multiple generations. So, you know, the other piece of this is we've really collaborated with our providers so that if our providers identified patients that were struggling with getting fresh produce, they could write a script. And they could redeem that script at the Vegemobile. And again, as Frank stated, we started this with only a couple stops. And then as word got out and we started sharing calendars at the senior center, we started publishing where the Vegemobile stops would be on the local radio station. We started having a lot of people reach out to us saying, hey, look, we have a large senior population. They meet every day to play euchre at a certain location. Could you make that a stop? We had the colleges reach out to us. Saying, you know, that many of their students struggled with getting fresh produce, particularly when the school was shut down and they were staying, you know, during those off seasons. So it kind of it grew from there, and even so far to having local convenience stores that were in more vulnerable communities, you know, would comment that, again, because of the shelf life, they weren't able to offer fresh produce. So they reached out to us to see if we could form a connection with different growers or different manufacturers that might be able to discount produce for them so they could add that to their shelf and offer that as one of their choices to the communities that use them as their regular grocery store. So it, you know, it started small and just really grew just by raising awareness and forming connections and responding to community and patient needs.
Right. Yeah. And I might be getting ahead of myself, but I don't want to forget to ask if there were anybody if anybody listening was interested in collaborating with ProMedica on these efforts, what steps should they take? Or if they heard about the Veggie Mobile and they wanted it to come to their community, if it's within range of where you are serving, how would they go about that?
Frank, you want to take that one?
I was going to say, anybody's more than welcome to reach out. We can always share insights on how the program came to formation, the ways that we use data and feedback from the community to develop it. We've been operating primarily in Lenawee County, and with the schedule, do have a pretty at capacity schedule. But I think the beauty of this work too is it's designed so that it can be replicated. And across healthcare, my hope is we can continue to share these models that are working well so that they can be replicated to serve our communities across the country. So people are more than welcome to reach out. We also have a Facebook page that just shares some information about our programming. But I think more so in that space of partnership, an email, phone call is the best way to go. And we can go from there about how we can support.
Perfect. I just didn't want to forget to ask that question. And we'll include links to all the resources to get in touch with the team. So what has the response been from the communities who have utilized these services?
We, unfortunately, things break down. So there are times where we have to pull the Vegemobile off of the schedule. And we hear from the community. Or, when we get it back up and running and we get out there, it's amazing how many people say, oh, my gosh, we missed you. We really rely on you. Again, I think, unfortunately, we can't stop at every location that everybody would like us to stop at. And Frank is constantly reevaluating the schedule to see if there's any additions we can make or if we can switch it around to make it as equitable as possible through the community. But, I'll tell you, like I stated, for leaders, I think when you do unique initiatives like this, take the time to spend some time inside those operations. So again, I mentioned I did a field trip. I actually took my son and we went the whole day on the Vegemobile and we got to help them set up. But more importantly, I just get to sit there with the community members. And, Lucy, you know that being in healthcare, we all have to have what's called patient family advisory councils. And again, mm-hmm. We expect a diverse population to come to us and give us input on how we're doing. And I think nowadays, particularly when we serve communities with transportation issues, we really need to do a better job going out into the community and getting folks' input. So during these field trips, I had the unique opportunity just talking to people, not just how important the Vegemobile was to them and the educational opportunities of the farm, but just how we were doing related to access. If there were certain specialties they wish we had, I learned from a family, it was an extended family. So there was grandparents, there was aunt and uncles all living in the same house. And they all had some type of medical issues that required routine follow-up care. And they had a limited gas budget. So he shared some advice on how it would be helpful to have offices be able to see the schedule for the entire family so they could try to decrease the amount of trips that they would have to make into our Metro Toledo area or even into our Lenawee County hub, and how we could help facilitate more virtual visits. Mm-hmm. So I think it was a really unique opportunity for me to hear back from the patients that we serve and the communities we serve, but also to observe the environments that they're living in and seeing what other initiatives we may be able to assist in. Again, we can't do it all, but Frank talked about anchor institutions, and we are one of those. And so we can form connections. So if there's housing issues, transportation issues, by being out there, getting feedback from the folks that live in that environment, we can better represent them and form connections that hopefully can find solutions to other social determinants that we might not be addressing ourselves.
Right. Yeah. That reminds me of the last month's episode. We talked about medical mistrust and how for some communities who are vulnerable, it's hard to just get to the doctor's office for many reasons. There are many barriers that may exist. So getting out into the community, I can imagine that being on site and having those conversations has an impact that goes far beyond even the food insecurity piece. Frank, anything you'd add on the response that you've gotten from those who are utilizing the services?
Yeah, I think that being able to mobilize the resources to the community, like Dr. Yao said, it built trust, but it was a progression. We had to keep showing up and show the community that they could rely on that resource being available. and that what it was portrayed as was delivering, you know, so it was truly providing produce at cost. And as that trust was built, it opened up the door for community members to share feedback. The farm was designed because of feedback that was shared through the Vegemobile. So we're like, great, the community now has access to fresh produce. But we found people were asking questions. How do I even prepare this? Or where does Brussels sprouts come from? You know, and we were hearing from some youth, you know, the perception of, well, I know that that comes from the grocery store in the can. When in reality, we saw, okay, there's this beautiful farm that's already at the farm. And with Dr. Yarrow and the leadership there, we're able to put that campus into work so that there now is this hub of education that shows people not only where their food comes from, you know, a clinically accessible hoop house and outdoor gardens, but then partnerships that were formed that provide cooking demonstrations and really show people, okay, here's how you can garden, but here's how this food can also be used in your day-to-day in a really tasty recipe, and really start to overcome some of those perceptions like, veggies aren't good. No, actually, you know what? There's a lot of recipes that make it taste great. And there's been a really positive response to where kids coming in from school groups are plucking tomatoes off of the plants and popping one in their mouth when they're walking around. And we're kind of overcoming some of that bias about produce, veggies, and healthy eating just by being able to expand upon it at the farm with cooking demonstrations, gardening, and education. And we're so fortunate, to Dr. Yarrow's point, to have partnerships because we have evidence-based programs and workshops that are offered. We have a great partnership with local farmers and our local corrections facility that has a gardening program. And there's tons of produce that we're able to collaborate in either donating back to the community or just taking to the community so it's more accessible.
That's wonderful. I do need you to expand on what a hoop house is.
So the hoop house is like a greenhouse. It has inside of it grow beds. So ours is a little bit unique in the partnership where this was established. It was designed with grow beds inside the hoop house that are called keyhole beds. So if somebody's sitting in a chair, they're in a wheelchair, they use a walking device, they can be in the center of that gardening environment and be hands-on and active, but it's completely encapsulated like a greenhouse with the visqueen or tarp over top. But the really cool thing is it has a thermostat inside, so it's able to lift the sidewalls and keep the internal temperature really regulated so we can grow produce year-round. So we know in Michigan, our winters can be pretty intense, pretty cold, but we're able to adjust the growing season plan so we can have colder temperament crops like spinach, leafy greens, among other things. And we can still be providing produce in some capacity, but then we really take it to scale in the warmer months in the traditional growing season.
That's incredible. I really appreciate you sharing so much detail about that. And no, yeah, I just wanted to make sure people weren't thinking it was like a place where kids were hula hooping. I don't know. I should have the thought of like, maybe we should clarify what that is. I want to be conscious of how busy the both of you are, but are there any, two-part question, are there any plans, and I know you kind of touched on this in how people can reach out, but are there any plans to expand the work of the Vegemobile and ProMedica Farms? And then as a second part of that question, what other efforts are underway at ProMedica to advance in public health?
So I'm going to let Frank answer this question. So, you know, our farm, we're always looking at different partnerships with the local schools, Boys and Girls Clubs, senior centers. Again, listening to the community on what programs they would find interesting. Again, if people don't attend, we're not making a difference or an impact. So we're always up for anyone's advice as to what they would find beneficial related to our healthy cooking classes and our educational classes on how you can grow at your own home or in your apartment. So we encourage feedback because we're here to serve everyone else, not just serve what we're passionate about. But I think, you know, as it just relates to how we address other needs in our community that have direct impacts on health and well-being, I think Frank has some additional opportunities we're exploring that he can share with your listeners.
Yeah. And even so, since we walk you through that timeline and, you know, we have the farm education, one of the newer things that we have done is we implemented a food security initiative where we've partnered with our food bank and we get prepackaged food bags that we ultimately have delivered at the farm. We put some recipe cards, information about local food pantries, and we're able to have those food bags delivered to our primary care offices. And then the hospital also has food resources at discharge so that any patient that screens positive for food insecurity has a resource when they leave our offices or our facilities. And they also have a listing of the resources that are available in the community so that they're supported outside of our facility as well. And so what we're doing with the farm is really looking at what ways can we further connect some of the gardening and those educational opportunities to patient cohorts that are screening positive for food insecurity, be able to lean a little bit more into that for patient offerings, also for our staff. I mean, we have large gardens out there, so we're opening it up with gardening plots. If staff, you know, don't have a garden at home, but would like to just contribute to almost like a community garden model, staff and community can support that as well. We are really fortunate that we have a strong volunteer program. We have over 50 volunteers that come and just support routinely with the day-to-day maintenance of the farm. But overall, I think we're really looking at how can we just further connect with the patient cohorts with SDOH, and then look at, are there ways we can mobilize some of our resources to disinvested portions of our community? Segueing into another part, we've been doing some analysis over the last couple of years through the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Social Vulnerability Index. And we saw in East Adrian, so City of Adrian's our city, our county seat, we saw 3 census tracts that had social vulnerability indexes that were much higher than the rest of the county. And they were at a very high risk state. So internally, what we looked at, we also noticed that our positive screens for social determinants of health were largely coming from the same zip code. And we started forming some partnerships, which ultimately led to us announcing what's called the Adrian Ebi Neighborhood Promise. So it's a replication for a rural community of our Toledo model, the Toledo Ebi Neighborhood Promise, where we have an Ebi center located within the downtown market of Toledo. But we're tailoring and replicating this for a rural community. And from what we can see, it's one of the only or first of its kind type of rural investments to really focus on the placemaking. So we've partnered with over 50 agencies, and we're working within these disinvested neighborhoods to get feedback from community members about what's needed from a resource perspective. And what we've started focusing on now is mobilizing evidence-based and no-cost programming and workshops that are centered around finances and education, jobs and training, health and housing. And so we started offering that programming in September. We've been able to offer about 57 workshops that serve just over 100 community members, and we're just getting started. And really all of this is centered around mobilizing those resources to that underserved portion of the community, but being able to serve the county and really anyone that needs those resources. So I guess with that, I think the things that we're doing to expand upon the farm is providing those wraparound supports. Because if somebody screens positive for food insecurity, it's likely they're also screening positive for other domains of social determinants of health as well. So we want to make sure we have a strong continuum of financial empowerment resources, housing resources, transportation, and the full list of the others. And that's where our team is working in the neighborhood. So we have some office space that we're renting right now, and we're building that presence, but ultimately we'll be expanding the programming that's available through partnerships and through new program design based on philanthropic investments, grants, and other resources we can allocate to really addressing these major health disparities and inequities we see that exist in these neighborhoods as compared to the county.
Right. Yeah. Well, it sounds like you have a lot going on, and I think that there's so much that our listeners are going to take away from this conversation. And there's so much to learn from the model that ProMedica is following in this space. And it sounds like we'll definitely have to have you both back to learn more about those other initiatives as well. So the last question I have for you before I let you both go is, how would you encourage fellow hospital leaders to get engaged in public health efforts this National Public Health Week? Julie, we can start with you.
Yeah, so I'd encourage them to think outside the box. You know, it's a team effort. It's a community effort. So, you know, find people's passion. you know, healthcare is not just about making a diagnosis and a treatment. I think there is a lot more we can do in collaborating with others. So again, you know, our Veggiemobile, collaborate with a logistics company that might have a refrigerated truck, a correctional facility that grows a garden. Really look at unique partners and take advantage of those unique touches as an opportunity to listen to the folks that we serve and get feedback on how we're doing related to their health and wellness. Those touches also allow us to really look at the trust that our community has in us and for us to find a unique way in building that trust, building a better understanding, and offering another vehicle that we can listen, but also take advantage of that environment so that we can help educate on who we are, what we do, and how we can help them. Mm-hmm. So I guess my takeaway is think outside the box. Never think an idea is too crazy, because trust me, Frank and I have been told kind of crazy in what we do. Inspire others. I want to do a shout out to St. Joseph Hospital up in Ypsilanti, because they let us come out and tour. Their team that had a farm, they came out on our site and really helped educate us, so we didn't have as many barriers that we thought we would have. And that's what we need to do. We need to tell our story. We need to share some of those things that may be a little bit crazy or unique that we're doing, and inspire others to do the same. Because again, there's not one way to treat a person. There's multiple ways. And the more creative we are, sometimes the better the results are.
Right. I think that's wonderful, wonderful advice. And to make a callback to something you said earlier that stuck with me is get outside the four walls of your operation. So I think that's really valuable. Frank, what about you?
Yeah, I think getting outside the four walls and actively listening, like really take that time to just ask, what can we do better? And I think when we create those safe spaces, we'll get honest feedback, and we have to be willing to hear that feedback. You know, some of it will be tough. Some of it will be positive, but I think we need to learn from that to be able to do better, but most importantly, to build that trust so we can know what are the community's true needs and what are specifically the barriers. Let's get to the root cause of what is really causing these barriers to exist, and make informed and data-driven decisions with community member input that help to overcome those. So let's not rely on perceptions and what we think maybe the community needs. Let's get out there and let's create the spaces. Let's have collaborative meetings. Let's learn from lived experience. But I think it really takes some time to get out there. And I would encourage, you know, if you're a hospital, maybe think about, are there ways you can align your community health needs assessment initiatives to some of this work? Or do you have team members that are doing things that are pretty similar, and maybe they could just dedicate an hour, a quarter to doing something out in the community? And if we start small, I think there's ways we can strategically go incremental for the betterment of our community.
Absolutely. You both give such good advice, and I appreciate so much the work that you're doing and the insight that you've provided today. We're definitely going to have you both back. Sorry, Dr. Yarrow, I'm dragging you back a third, fourth time, fifth time probably. And Frank, you'll definitely be a repeat guest. So thank you both so much. Happy National Public Health Week. Is there anything else that you want to make a call back to for efforts going on at ProMedica? Or we'll include a link to your website, but anything else you want to mention before we close?
You know, Lucy, I just want to say thank you to MHA for your attention to public health. I also want to thank all of my colleagues out there that are over other organizations. And I know everybody is doing something unique and absolutely fabulous in the communities that they serve. But I also want to just encourage all of the listeners out there that are patients, and I'm sure we're all patients. You know, public health is two ways. Mm-hmm. So encourage folks to make sure that they are honest with their providers, and they share those barriers, those gaps that may prevent them from following their treatment plan. Because ultimately, we got to listen to one another, and we got to find a common goal and achieve results together.
Right.
So again, thank you for all that you do, and true honor being on this podcast and being in front of all your listeners.
Thanks, Julie.
And I would just add a thank you to, because none of it's possible without our partnerships. Like I said, we have over 50 community partners that allocate and align resources to a common goal. And none of it's possible without those partnerships. So one, a deep appreciation to all of them. Too many to list, but that's a good problem to have. And I also want to say thank you, Lucy, to you and the MHA team, Dr. Yarrow, for all of the bold leadership to look at how do we look at things differently? How do we start to innovate more in how we address community needs? And more so, how do we do it in a way where we're stepping up and leading as an example versus really trying to guess at how we design and serve community? So it's a true sign of servant leadership. And I know I've learned a ton from these opportunities. So thank you for the podcast. And if I'm not on, I'm going to be listening in. So thanks.
Perfect. Thank you. All right. Well, with that, I want to thank our listeners for tuning in. And those interested in learning more about ProMedica can head to promedica.org. We'll include a link in the description. And we'll also include some more information specifically about the ProMedica Farms and Veggie Mobile. So with that, thanks again, and we'll be back next month. Thanks for listening to the My Care Champion Cast. To learn more or get involved, visit mha.org.